December the 28th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you here. Coming up, possibly pulling U.S. troops out of Afghanistan.
The optimistic view is you could say, okay, Trump decided to announce this withdrawal of 7,000 troops as an olive branch. It was meant to extend an olive branch to the Taliban.
And more protests in Sudan.
They say the protests are aimed at drawing attention to what the groups consider an excessive use of force against people who have taken to the streets to condemn a rise in food and fuel prices.
Also ahead, a look back at a busy year in politics in the U.S., plus something from the world of music. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. U.S. Commander of Foreign Forces in Afghanistan has traveled to Pakistan, there to discuss Afghanistan reconciliation efforts with Pakistan's military chief. This comes just days after Pakistan held another round of talks with its staunch ally, China, on what they call the evolving politics and the dynamics in Afghanistan, amid reports the U.S. plans to reduce its military presence in Afghanistan. Michael Kugelman is director of the Asia Program at Wilson Center. He speaks with VOA Asia's Ira Melman about the many issues ahead.
Well, there's a lot to unpack for sure. I think that the President Trump's decision to withdraw half of the U.S. troop presence in Afghanistan has set in motion a lot of diplomacy. And I think that Pakistan now sees that it can play an even bigger role than it had originally thought it could play in a potential peace process with Afghanistan. I mean, I think that the fact that President Trump has now declared a partial withdrawal from the country, I think will really cause the U.S. to lose a lot of leverage at the negotiating table, simply because it's basically given the Taliban what it's always wanted, and the Taliban hasn't had to give up anything in return. So on the assumption that the U.S. role and presence in Afghanistan will be receding quite soon, I think that allows Pakistan an opportunity to step up to the plate and use its influence to work with the Taliban to try to bring it to the peace table. And I think that it would look to certain partner countries. And in this case, essentially all of the countries that Foreign Minister Qureshi has traveled to or is planning to travel to: China, Russia, and Iran. And, you know, the ironic thing, as you know, is these are countries that don't get along with the U.S., but they're countries that do get along with Pakistan, and which Pakistan feels can help Islamabad try to bring the Taliban to the table and try to start talking.
Is this what you think President Trump meant to do?
No, not at all. I mean, I think that the optimistic view is you could say, okay, Trump decided to announce this withdrawal of 7,000 troops as an olive branch. It was meant to extend an olive branch to the Taliban. It was meant to be a concession to say, well, look, we know that you've always have wanted us to indicate that we're ready to withdraw our forces. And then, you know, we've done that. And now, you know, we'd like you to step up to the plate, and we'd like you to start talking and negotiating an end to the war, preferably with the Afghan government. But I don't think that's what's happened. I don't think that Trump announced this withdrawal of U.S. troops because of anything connected to the fledgling peace process with the Taliban. I think Trump announced this withdrawal from Afghanistan simply because he was fed up with staying there. He had never been comfortable in Afghanistan. He almost, according to his own claims, he almost decided to pull out last year instead of agreeing to stay and add a few thousand more troops. So I think that he felt that now was the time. He, of course, had also announced the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Syria, and he thinks he's looking at the domestic political situation in the U.S. He knows that he's increasingly vulnerable. He knows that presidential election is not that far away. The U.S. presidential election is not far away, and he knows that his core base in the U.S. does not support extended U.S. military presences abroad. So I think that he was basically just making a unilateral declaration of the withdrawal because he just had concluded that he does not want to be in Afghanistan anymore.
Michael Kugelman is director of the Asia Program at the Wilson Center. He was speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. President Trump and a top Democrat are sparring over the partial U.S. government shutdown going on right now, which many say will not be ending anytime soon. We get more from AP's Sagar Magani.
The president's pushing Democrats to give in to his demands for money to build a border wall he says the nation desperately needs. He says they should know the shutdown is affecting their supporters, tweeting, "Do the Dems realize that most of the people not getting paid are Democrats?" That drew a sharp response from Democratic Senator Mark Warner, the Intelligence Committee's vice chairman, who says the comments are outrageous. Warner tweets, "Federal employees don't go to work wearing red or blue jerseys. They're public servants." He adds, "The president's treating them like poker chips at one of his failed casinos." Sagar Magani, Washington.
And still ahead on the International Edition, tensions in Sudan. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
The Christmas tree is a popular centerpiece for many of the people who celebrate the holiday this time of year. But once the holiday is over, it's time to take down the tree and put away the decorations for another year. Those who prefer a live Christmas tree over an artificial model also must decide how to dispose the tree itself. Rather than just depositing the used Christmas trees in a landfill, researchers at the UK's University of Sheffield suggest that the tree's pine needles can actually be processed into bioproducts that can be used in a number of industries. The researchers say the pine needles can be broken down into a liquid and a solid byproduct. Among the chemicals that could be produced from the pine needles are glucose, an ingredient that can be processed into sweeteners for food, and acetic acid for making paint, adhesives, and even vinegar. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Journalists and trade unions in Sudan have called for more anti-government protest as the head of the country's parliament agreed to question the interior minister about the use of force against demonstrators. Protesters this week called for the resignation of Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, who accused large Western states, in his words, of provoking the economic crisis which now embroils the whole country. Edward Uranian has our report.
A Sudanese journalist network, along with a number of labor and trade unions, issued calls on Thursday for a day of peaceful protests against the government. They say the protests are aimed at drawing attention to what the groups consider an excessive use of force against people who have taken to the streets to condemn a rise in food and fuel prices. The government says that 8 protesters have been killed during clashes between protesters and security forces, while some opposition groups say more than 24 people have died. Meanwhile, the head of Sudan's parliament has summoned Interior Minister Ahmed Bilal Osman for questions about the casualties. Suleiman Idris, Secretary General of the Islamic Party, a component of the governing coalition in Sudan, told journalists that peaceful protests are protected by the constitution and that spilling blood is unacceptable. He says that he opposes killing and the use of violence, and that citizens anywhere in the country have the right to protest in accordance with the Constitution and all international human rights declarations. He calls on the government to conduct an inquiry into the death of protesters, since the people's blood is sacred and must not be spilled. However, Yusuf Jalal, a spokesman for the journalist network, told Arab media that journalists are not satisfied. He says that the journalist network is calling for a work stoppage and its members will be covering only essential news, along with what he called the repression taking place in the streets by security forces. He says that Parliament's decision to question the Interior Minister over the use of force is not a convincing move, since most members of Parliament belong to the ruling party. In a speech to graduating military cadets Thursday, Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir blamed Western nations for causing the current economic crisis that has hit his country. He says that Arab and Islamic states are subject to both political and economic blackmail by the large nations to force them to submit to their dictates because they still harbor long-lost dreams of controlling natural resources. The United States lifted economic sanctions on Sudan in October, but the Sudanese pound has continued to lose much of its value against the dollar, prompting shortages of bread, fuel, and currency across the country. President Bashir came to power in a 1989 coup. He is wanted on an arrest warrant from the International Criminal Court for human rights violations in the country's Darfur state. Lawmakers recently amended the Constitution to allow him to run for another term in 2020. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The United Arab Emirates reopened its embassy in Damascus, a sign that Syrian President Bashar al-Assad is returning to the Arab fold. Reuters' Lucy Fielder reporting now that the UAE once funded rebels opposed to Assad, who has reestablished an iron grip on Syria.
The UAE, a U.S. ally, was once among Arab countries that funded rebels fighting against Assad. Its embassy closed in the early months of the war that erupted in 2011. One reason for the change of heart, the UAE said, was to, quote, curb regional interference, an apparent reference to its arch-rival Iran. But it's also recognition that Assad has recovered the bulk of Syria over the past couple of years, with critical military support from Russia, Iran, and Shiite armed groups such as Lebanon's Hezbollah. And he received another possible boost last week when Donald Trump decided to pull US forces out of northern and eastern Syria, where they support Kurdish-led militia.
That is Reuters' Lucy Fielder. Mount Etna, Europe's most active volcano, continues to spew ash and lava, and earthquake tremors show no signs of easing up for the time being. It was a relatively tranquil night, though, for the hundreds that have been displaced in Sicily following the 4.8 magnitude earthquake. Sabina Castelfranco in Rome is following the story.
A state of emergency is being declared in eastern Sicily following the Wednesday morning quake associated with Mount Etna's eruption. Experts and firefighters are assessing the damage in the six most affected councils and cleaning up the debris from several buildings and churches that were severely damaged. Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte thanked the hundreds of rescuers and volunteers helping out in affected areas north of the eastern Sicilian city of Catania. He also expressed the hope that the injured would soon feel better. The two deputy prime ministers, Luigi Di Maio and Matteo Salvini, were visiting the affected population and areas on Thursday. Angelo Borrelli, the head of Italy's Civil Protection Department, said emergency shelters were set up in schools and gyms. Beds and food are being provided for the hundreds of people who have had to leave their unsafe homes or are too scared to go back. He said others are staying in four hotels that have been made available, but many still preferred to sleep in their cars outside their houses. The more recent tremors have been of a much lower intensity, but residents in this part of Sicily are nervous. The quake and tremors are linked to a new fracture that opened near Mount Etna's southeast crater. In recent days, the eruption has been shooting volcanic ash, heavy smoke and lava, which is flowing down an uninhabited side of the mountain. Experts monitoring the volcano said they could not rule out other fractures opening up lower down the mountain. Officials of the civil protection said they could also not exclude that this kind of activity would continue for weeks, that it is unpredictable. This official said Etna is a volcano which has traditionally had eruptions that have lasted for a long time, so there would be careful monitoring. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
This year proved to be one of change in U.S. politics. Opposition Democrats won back control of the House of Representatives. That was in the November midterm elections, which could have a profound impact on the next 2 years of Donald Trump's presidency. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from the VOA Washington News Center.
Thanks to you, tomorrow will be a new day in America.
Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi celebrating the midterm results that returned the House to Democratic control.
I am Congresswoman-elect Rashida Tlaib.
Democrats fueled their victory with opposition to President Donald Trump, spurred by a strong turnout of women and progressive voters on behalf of candidates like Massachusetts Democrat Ayanna Pressley.
We have affirmed that while this could go down as the darkest time in our history, we won't let it be. And instead, we will be defined by our hopes, not our fears.
Thank you very much. Please.
President Trump now faces the prospect of a stalled legislative agenda and numerous oversight investigations launched by House Democrats. But Trump remains defiant.
They got nothing. Zero. You know why? Because there is nothing. But they can play that game, but we can play it better.
The fact is, you do not have the votes in the House.
Nancy, I do. And we need border security. Nancy.
Trump and Democratic leaders have already clashed over funding for his border wall, a preview of the partisan fights to come, says analyst John Fortier.
Democrats will certainly use their majority to highlight some differences with Donald Trump and to investigate the Trump administration. And then we'll be spending this year leading into the presidential election of 2020, so it's a transition year.
Without full Republican control of Congress, Trump may be looking to cut some deals with Democrats, says Jim Kessler.
At this point, we have not seen Donald Trump really have the ability to work with Democrats to cut any sort of deal in the first 2 years, so Mr. Art of the Deal has really fallen short. We'll see if that is possible this time.
But the president will also have to deal with the Russia investigation, which may be moving toward a conclusion in the coming months. Veteran political analyst Tom DeFrank.
This is a watershed year coming up for President Trump. I mean, he's going to have to confront whatever it is that Robert Mueller says about him or alleges. And I think it's going to be a difficult year for him.
This election's about jobs and judges, borders.
Trump will be increasingly focused on the next presidential election, but so will scores of Democrats who hope to defeat him, says Guillen McKee.
You know, I think the reality is that the 2020 campaign has begun. That's probably unfortunate, but that shapes everything going forward.
Ours is the greatest political movement.
What happens in 2019 could go a long way to determining whether Donald Trump is a one-term or two-term president.
And thank you very much, everybody.
Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Well, it's turned out that U.S. stock prices have extended their rebound with a last-minute rally on Wall Street. We get that story now from AP's Warren Levinson.
Taken by itself, the stock market's performance seemed ordinary, up 1%, 260 points on the Dow Jones Industrials. It was the second straight day share prices rose. They were up 1,000 Wednesday. But for most of the day, prices were in the red and deep in the red, down 600 Dow points till they staged a rebound in the final hour of trading. Retail stocks fell, but materials companies, banks, and healthcare issues all rose. The NASDAQ Composite added 0.3%, the S&P 3/4. The market is still on pace to record its biggest December price drop since 1931. Warren Levinson, New York.
And still ahead, the sounds of Katie Lang. This is VOA.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat and dumbolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. Time now for a little something from the world of music. Dawn Lang, known by her stage name as Katie Lang, is a Canadian pop and country singer-songwriter. Lang has won both Juno Awards and Grammy Awards for her musical performances, hits including Constant Craving. Graduation from college in 1982, Lang formed a Patsy Cline tribute band called the Reclines. Singing at country and western venues in Canada, Lang began to establish an appearance and style referred to as cowboy punk, and got her first international recognition in 1988 when she performed at the Winter Olympics. Katie Lang has contributed songs to movie soundtracks as well as collaborations with musicians such as Roy Orbison, Elton John, Anne Murray, and Tony Bennett, with whom she sang the song Blue Velvet as Bennett was approaching 90 years old.
She wore blue. Bluer than velvet was the night, softer than satin was the light from the stars.
She wore blue. Bluer than velvet were her eyes, warmer than May her tender sighs. Love was ours,
a love I held tightly, feeling grow like a flame burning brightly. But when she left, gone was the glow of
blue velvet.
Katie Lang is also known for being an animal rights, gay rights, and Tibetan human rights activist. And she's especially known for performing Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah in 2006 when he was inducted into the Canadian Songwriters Hall of Fame.
David played and it pleased the Lord, but you don't really care for music, do you? Well, it goes like this, a fourth, a fifth, a minor fall, a major left, a baffled king composing hallelujah, hallelujah. Hallelujah, hallelujah.
As I already mentioned, she has many collaborations with Tony Bennett, with whom Katie Lang continues to tour regularly, and he may in fact be her biggest fan. And he declared to the press not long ago what many fans have believed for so long. She's the best singer of her generation. Among all of Katie's popular songs, this one is right up near the top of the list. Everybody always requests it when she's doing a concert. Listen, many thanks, everyone, for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. It's always good to have you here. The latest world news is straight ahead, so we hope you'll stay with us for that. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Carl Starling, I'm Steve Norman. We're all in Washington, hoping you have a super weekend. Now a bit more from Katie Lang.
Does some wine taste better just because it costs more? Scientists held a wine tasting inside an MRI scanner to find out. Those tested did have a stronger response in the part of the brain thought to judge pleasantness when told a wine came with a high price tag, no matter what the wine really cost. Here's Earth and Sky's Lindsay Patterson with more.
I spoke to Antonio Rangel at the California Institute of Technology, neuroscientist and author of this 2008 study. He said the study was to find out which variables affect the experience of pleasantness in the brain. He said the study shows that whether you judge something as pleasant or unpleasant does not just depend on objective circumstances. The study shows that we go into an experience with beliefs or expectations which affect the experience itself.
So people expect that higher price equals higher quality, and so they have a more pleasant experience.
Right. And the signals in their brain reflect that. Rangel said it would take an expert to be unaffected by the cost. The rest of us take whatever indicators of quality we can get.
So what does that tell us about ourselves and wine?
If you think the expensive wine is going to be good, it will be good. If you think the reasonably priced wine is going to be good, it'll be pretty good too.
Thanks, Lindsay. We're Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
VOA News.